Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Illinois, dedicated to improving the quality of life for Illinois farmers by offering financial products and services geared specifically to the farm community and developing partnership-based relationships with its agricultural customers.
From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the closing market report for December 17th, 2014. This is Dave Dickey. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Jackie Vakes of Stuart Peterson Group in Champaign, Illinois. In agricultural news, EPA Administrator Gina McCarthy says she still plans on finalizing revisions to the Clean Water Act in 2015. We'll have that in other stories. Also this half hour, Todd Gleason speaks with U of I Department of Agricultural and Consumer Economics Professor Scott Irwin about the energy market. And meteorologist Drew Lerner will give us the latest on agricultural weather. It's all on the Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report.
Support comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 12th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's ag programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold's support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold is at agrigold.com.
Let's see how futures settled on this Wednesday afternoon. Hard red winter March wheat settled at 681 and a half, up 26 and three quarters. May, 284 and a half, up 26 and a half. Soft March wheat, 648 and a half, the settlement there, up 25 and a quarter. May, 650 and three quarters, up 24 and a half. March corn settled at 408 and a quarter, up 2 and a quarter. May, 416 and a half, up 2. July, 423 and a quarter, up 2 and a quarter. December, 432, up 1 and a half. January soybeans settled at 1027, up 3 and a half. March, 1035 and a quarter, up 4. July, 1046 and three quarters, up 5 and a quarter. January soybean meal settled at 359.30, up 270. January soybean oil settled at 31.77, unchanged. Some last trades now. December live cattle, 156.42 and a half, down 255. January feeders, 216.60, down $3. And February lean hogs, 80.37 and a half, and they are down 130. And those are the last trades and settlements from the Chicago Board of Trade.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Illinois. For over 96 years, generations of farmers have turned to Farm Credit for their financial needs. Whether a young farmer or a seasoned grower, Farm Credit offers products and services geared specifically to the agricultural community.
Looking at meteorologist Drew Lerner's weather highlights, he says Brazil is plenty moist across most of its summer crop areas. Additional rain over the next 2 weeks will be timely enough and generalized enough to maintain moisture abundance in many areas. Some warmer temperatures might be welcome in a few areas, along with a few breaks in the precipitation. Argentina, however, has been placed on a watch list for possible dryness. Soil moisture in southern parts of the nation is already a little blotchy, with some areas favorably moist and others drying out. Rainfall in the next 2 weeks will be below average and still a little too erratic, resulting in some expansion of the drier pocketed areas for a while. Less than 1/2 inch of rain will occur through this time next week from Entre Rios and southern Santa Fe into La Pampa and a part of Buenos Aires. Southeastern Cordoba, southernmost Santa Fe, and northwestern Buenos Aires are included in the driest region of Argentina today, and a week's worth of drying will follow the Friday and Saturday rain event.
Agricultural programs are made possible by Risk Management Commodities Incorporated in Lafayette, Indiana, Chalmers, Indiana, and Hudsonville, Illinois. Risk Management Commodities focuses on managing risk in today's complex and sophisticated commodities market. 866-837-9027.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. This is Dave Dickey. Joining us on the phone for a look at the futures market is Jackie Vakes of Stewart Peterson Group in Champaign, Illinois. Good afternoon, Jackie.
Well, good afternoon, Dave.
We begin with markets moving in opposite directions, although they don't have a whole lot to do with one another, but they were notable, and that's feeder cattle and wheat. Where would you like to begin?
Well, how about we roll right over and we go over to the energies? And
okay.
Let's begin in the energies. And the deep drop that we've seen in the energies, I believe, is leading to what we're seeing going on in feeder cattle and even in wheat. What you've got is you've got guys who have used these markets as a hedge, perhaps against their Dow Jones and most certainly against their oil contracts, are now coming over here and they're taking money from here to meet margins over in the crude oil market. And you can't say that that's the absolute only reason that we're seeing what we are, but it helps to make more sense out of what's going on in a lot of ways. I mean, we had already reacted strong to the fact that Russia was going to ban exports, and we bounced that wheat market up. We know that most of your traditional funds have been pretty short on wheat for a long period of time, and so kind of makes sense when you look at what's happening.
So oil taking care of part of that market, but there's also other fundamental news affecting the wheat market, and that involves Russia.
That's exactly right. You know, Russia really did come in, and they did say that they were going to ban exports today. The interesting part is, Dave, they only really sell to four different countries, Egypt, India, Turkey, and Armenia, and the traders over there, the people who actually, the exporters who sell wheat, are just having a hissy fit because they say they could export at least another 30 million metric tons before they'd even get close to Russia's, you know, cutting into Russia's supplies, and a lot of those guys have actual commitments out to April. So it's going to be very interesting to see how this shakes out. I've been reading a lot. Mr. Putin right now supposedly has all-time high support from his people because he's claiming, I think we talked about this morning, that the West is sanctioning them just to hurt them. Maybe that's an effort to be able to say, well, 62% of our economy comes from oil prices, and we're really losing no matter how you look at it. The ruble has been dropping dramatically, and so things don't bode well for Russia, but it certainly did help put the wheat market at a higher level.
And eventually, if you are exporting and say, get paid in euros, you'd like to hold on to those, and maybe when things balance off, put them back in rubles.
That's exactly correct. And I think, you know, when you look at the dollar today, the dollar is above 89 again. We know that, you know, some people think the dollar is really only representative of us here in the U.S. That's not true at all. In fact, that's probably the furthest thing from the truth, because if people are concerned about economies, they're going to come over here and buy the dollar if they buy anything from the U.S. to be able to protect themselves. And so I think when you look at the bigger picture, certainly what we're seeing going on in so many places, and we know it's gone on in Argentina, which now has 40% inflation for a long, long time, that they were willing to pay 50% more to get a U.S. dollar versus hanging on to the real and the peso.
Meanwhile, we got word from no better source than Tom Vilsack, who says that the Chinese vice premier says that MIR will now be imported into China.
That's right. And, you know, I think it's interesting, you know, the Chinese are up in Chicago, and they bought the equivalent of about 36 million bushels of beans, which isn't a real big sale, but I think the significant one is the 900,000 metric tons of DDGs. We were exporting to them about 500,000 metric tons a month until we got to the middle of this year. And when this is when everything with Viptera kind of hit the wall, and we dropped all the way down to 167,000. So the 900,000 represents about 2 months of demand, or not quite 2 months of demand, like we had at the beginning of the year. So I'm guessing that we might be able to look forward to more purchases like that from them.
Yeah, this is for December to March, so maybe that's the start of something big.
Well, let's hope so.
Also, we got news just before we went on from the Federal Reserve, who had their two-day meeting today, and at 1:30 this afternoon came out with their report. And if you parse all of their reading of what they're saying, they're drawing a line in the sand that's called 2.0.
That's exactly right. And, you know, will they do it or won't they do it? Or when will it happen? My guess is it probably will happen when Yellen has a year in office, but it's hard to say. I mean, if you look back on any of the Fed chairmen, they very seldom did anything before they actually had a year in place. But we'll see. You know, they're drawing that line in the sand, and can we handle it? I think we can. Retail sales were down for this, you know, for this month compared to November so far for the first 2 weeks, rather disappointing. But at the very same time, we've got a lot of other things. Core inflation was down, too, just because gasoline prices went down so much.
Well, it's hard for inflation to heat up when world economies are melting down.
That's exactly right. And you know, if you really look back, when we saw Argentina's inflation, you know, drop from 5% to just flat, that's when everybody got really concerned about Argentina in terms of their core inflation, not their overall interest inflation. But that's when everybody got nervous, because inflation is a sign that your economy is moving forward in so many ways. When you look at core inflation, it gives you an idea that, you know, the demand is higher, there's things there, and people are paying more money for it. But it's pretty scary sometimes. I don't know. Going into 2015, I think, is going to be a very interesting year for all of us, especially us in commodities, because the action of the dollar, you can't rule out the idea, Dave, that we might be front-loading some of this marketplace just because of the fact that they're fearful that the dollar is going to go back up to that 90 or 92 level.
Thank you much, Jackie.
Thank you, Dave. You have an absolutely wonderful day.
Appreciate that. Jackie Vakes of Stuart Peterson Group. And she is in Champaign, Illinois. In agricultural news, Environmental Protection Agency Administrator Gina McCarthy says that congressional restrictions on EPA's activities in the omnibus appropriations bill will not prevent EPA from enforcing the law. McCarthy says she still plans to finalize the Waters of the United States revision in the Clean Water Act in 2015. Farmers had already registered their displeasure with the interpretive rule, which McCarthy noted had been published to try to give farmers assurance that their normal farming and ranching practices are exempt from EPA regulation. Republican members of Congress say, though, that they hope to block release of the final rule after they take control of the Senate as well as the House in January. The Senate late yesterday night passed the Tax Extenders Bill, which contains equipment depreciation and renewable fuels tax breaks important to agriculture. A pair of key provisions for farmers are Section 179, expensing and bonus depreciation. Congress let Section 179 drop for 2014 to $25,000. But the bill would kick that deduction back up to $500,000 for businesses spending $2 million or less in total equipment or machinery purchases. The bill also extends 50% bonus depreciation for business equipment and machinery purchased and put into operation in 2014. Senate Republican leader Mitch McConnell declared yesterday that approving the Keystone XL pipeline will top the Senate agenda in January. The $8 billion pipeline would carry more than 800,000 barrels of oil a day from Canada into the U.S. and eventually to the Texas Gulf Coast. The almost 1,200-mile project is proposed to go from Canada through Montana and South Dakota to Nebraska, where it will connect with existing pipelines to the Texas Gulf Coast. The Republican-led House has repeatedly passed legislation approving the pipeline, but the bills have died in the Democratic-controlled Senate. Plunging gasoline costs caused U.S. consumer prices to drop in November. The Labor Department today says the inflation reading fell 0.3% last month after prices were flat in October. Gas costs plummeted 10.5% in November, the steepest decline in nearly 6 years. Chinese firms last week purchased as much as 900,000 tons of dry distillers' grains, a corn byproduct from the U.S. The fresh purchases come after imports from the U.S. almost stopped after Beijing imposed restriction on shipments of the product used as a feed ingredient. The China National Grain and Oils Information Center says the 15 cargoes are for December to March shipment. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
From the Illinois Farm Economic Summit in Peoria, I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. This morning we're talking with Scott Irwin, ag economist from the U of I, about ethanol and its production, the ability of it to continue to compete in the marketplace as it's related to the RFS2, and what U.S. EPA has or has not done in the last year and a half. Scott, thanks for taking the time. Tell me about ethanol, its ability to compete at this point, because there's a lot of discussion about the price of corn, the price of ethanol, and the price of gasoline.
Right. There certainly have been dramatic changes in the relationship between ethanol and gasoline in recent weeks. For most of the time in recent years, ethanol is traded at a substantial discount to gasoline. Now it is trading at a substantial premium. But the important point to keep in mind, at least with respect to domestic U.S. use of ethanol, is that the price relationship to gasoline has very little to do with how much ethanol we will use. We're going to be stuck at the E10 blend wall going forward, just as we were going back in time.
Why is that the case?
Because the renewable fuel standards, even at the reduced level proposed by the EPA in their preliminary rulemaking for 2014, was at the E10 blend wall. So you're certainly not going to go below that level. So unless you repeal the RFS entirely, that safety net still stands. On the other side, let's say even if ethanol goes back to being priced much more cheaply than gasoline, we can't use much more because of the blend wall limitations.
And how much do we use? Where does the blend wall stand? And is it likely to move very much with the lower price of gasoline?
That's right. It stands someplace between 13 and 13.5 billion gallons. There's some possibility that that could edge up slightly with the decline in the price of gasoline. But we have to remember that the demand, short-run demand for gasoline is extremely steeply sloped, which means even with big changes in price, the quantity of gasoline doesn't change a lot.
So this brings us to the secondary question. If USDA, US EPA, resolves to not really change the statutes, which it appears from your opinion, I believe, that may not be the case for 2014 and 15, what happens inside the marketplace because there is a renewable gap?
That's right. And when we use the term renewable gap, we're talking about the amount of ethanol that is required by the renewable fuel standards that's above the E10 blend wall, which in theory at least can't be breached with 10% ethanol blends. So to fill that renewable gap, obligated parties have to choose one or more of the following alternatives. They have to use from their available stock of RINs credits if they have some. They can incentivize the use of higher blends like E15 or E85, or they can use a non-ethanol biofuel like biodiesel to meet that renewable gap.
Deal with them each separately? Do they have many RINs that would be available? How quickly would those be used up? I know each gallon comes with a RIN, but I'm not sure that there's that big of a supply of the available certificates.
Well, we know from there were roughly about 1.8 billion gallons of these things starting 2014. What we don't know, how the EPA sets the standards ultimately will determine how much we have going into 2015. If they go back to the statutory levels, probably not a lot. Maybe 400 or 500 million gallons at most going into 2015. That's what I expect, is that ultimately the obligated parties will have to, in some way, shape, or form, comply with the statutory obligations for 2014, which practically means we've used most of that inventory up.
How does that influence options 2 and 3 to fill the gap?
Well, then that means that, by and large, for all practical purposes, the pressure to fill that renewable gap will fall on either higher ethanol blends, E15 or E85 or biodiesel. And I do know that expansion of E85, which will require additional pumps to be put in place, that just simply can't happen that fast. We've talked to people in the industry, and they suggest to add additional E85 pumps takes a minimum of 8 to 12 months just to get through all the regulatory red tape, get them built, put them in. So we think that the burden of meeting that renewable gap will more than likely fall on biodiesel.
Is this likely to come from vegetable-based oils, and would that be corn oil out of the ethanol plant or soybean oil out of the soybean processing plant?
The answer is both. Over half of the ethanol plants in the United States have the capability of extracting corn oil from some point in the production process, and then that generally is going into biodiesel production. So that will continue to be used. Someplace around half of the feedstock for biodiesel in the U.S. is soybean oil, and that will continue. The rest is largely different kinds of reused cooking oil, recycled cooking oil, and fats and grease.
Is there a point at which the renewable gap, whether that's in 2015, 16, 17, some out year, gets so large that we begin to really put pressure on the marketplace to find and use vegetable oils and pay a much higher price for them?
That's a possibility, Todd, depending on how the statutes ultimately get resolved in the EPA's rulemaking. But just the arithmetic's fairly straightforward. In 2014, our statutory level was 14.4, so we use a figure of 13.5 billion gallons for the E10 blend wall, so that's 900 million gallons gap in 2014. The statute goes up to 15 billion gallons, so you're basically around 1.5 billion renewable gap, and that just goes all the way out to 2022. Plus, you have the advanced biofuels mandate itself continues to expand outside of cellulosic ethanol going forward. So you put all of that together, and the bottom line for us is we see, 2015, 2016, someplace in there, we probably are going to need to be producing through domestic production or drawing on non-U.S. production in the form of indoor imports around 3 billion gallons of biodiesel. It's a lot of biodiesel.
Thank you so much. That, of course, is Scott Irwin from the College of Agricultural, Consumer, and Environmental Sciences. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.
It's National Maple Syrup Day. On this day in agricultural history in 1843, Charles Dickens' A Christmas Carol was published. In 1857, Sir Francis Beaufort died. He invented the wind force scale. Officially adopted by the British Admiralty in 1838, it used numbers 0 to 12 to designate calm, light air, light breeze, gentle breeze, moderate breeze, fresh breeze, strong breeze, moderate gale, fresh gale, strong gale, whole gale, storm, and hurricane. In 1870, Bert Benjamin was born. An American inventor, He is responsible for the Farmall tractor and the power takeoff system on agricultural tractors. The Farmall was the first tractor that could plow and cultivate row crops. Benjamin, a graduate from Iowa State College, held 140 patents, ranging from a corn picker to a corn shredder to a corn binder. He spent nearly 40 years with the International Harvester Company. In 1892, George Brayton died. An American engineer, he invented the first commercial gas internal combustion engine. In 1903, powered human flight was achieved by the Wright brothers at Kitty Hawk, North Carolina. And in 1940, corn silk was recorded by Guy Lombardo and his Royal Canadians. And that's this day in agricultural history. Joining us now for a look at agricultural weather is World Weather Incorporated meteorologist Drew Lerner.
Weather conditions in Argentina will continue to be closely monitored as we move forward through this next two-week period because of a drying tendency that seems to be occurring on some very important corn and soybean production areas. That drier region includes southeastern portions of Cordoba and northwestern Buenos Aires, which is at the heart of some of the most important corn production country. The drier bias there will be temporarily eased by some rain coming up on Friday into Saturday. Rain totals may run up to 5 or 6 tenths of an inch during that period of time, which will buy a little bit of time for the region, but more dryness will come in as we go through the rest of the weekend and through a big part of next week. Another chance for rain will show up in that region about a week later on the following Friday or Saturday, which is the last one for the year in that particular region. The rest of Argentina will continue to see a timeliness of precipitation and favorable soil moisture will continue. I don't want to make the drier bias in the south sound critical at this point in time, but we do want to continue to monitor that region as the area does need to see a big soaking of rainfall. Temperatures in Argentina will turn quite cool over the weekend and into the early part of next week, and that cooler bias will help to conserve soil moisture so that there is no major stress for the majority of the crops that are suffering from low moisture. In northern Argentina, Paraguay, Uruguay, and Brazil, the environment is quite favorable for summer crop development and will continue that way through a big part of the next 2 weeks. We're expecting to see a regular occurrence of showers and thunderstorms occurring in those areas, and temperatures will be mostly in a seasonable range. We do expect a handful of locations in Brazil to perhaps get a little bit too wet, but it's not going to be a widespread problem. In the U.S., weather changes are coming up over the coming week to 10 days. Much colder air will seep into the middle of the country, and that will stimulate a large storm system that may end up occurring close to the Christmas holiday. A storm system of large size has been suggested by a couple of the computer weather forecast models today over the eastern portions of the Midwest and the middle and northern Atlantic coastal states, and that will likely take place anytime during the second half of next week and may linger into the following weekend. That could hamper travel into those areas, so plans ought to be made at this point in time to make adjustments to travel in that region if indeed that storm system comes about. In the meantime, the eastern Midwest will likely be influenced by that particular storm potential, and we may see some much colder temperatures, windy conditions, and perhaps rain changing to snow taking place as we move closer to the holiday. There's still plenty of time for the storm system to change, and we'll continue to monitor it rather closely over these next few days. In the meantime, minor weather disturbances are expected to impact the Midwest. We'll expect the first disturbance to start to influence the region later tonight and tomorrow. Most of the precipitation is going to be light, but it will occur as a wintry mix coming out of portions of Kansas and Nebraska into parts of southern Iowa and Illinois, and eventually into parts of southwestern Indiana. The system is expected to diminish as it comes to the east and will not likely encounter any substantial accumulations of ice or snow, but there will be enough that travel will be hindered for a little while. Drier weather bias conditions will prevail after that until we get into Saturday, when another disturbance is likely to impact a part of the Ohio River Valley. This is meteorologist Drew Lerner.
And that is today's Closing Market Report. This is Dave Dickey.